Welcome to It's All About the Product. I'm Henry Latham, CEO of Product Mastery, and with me is
Rob Hamblin, founder of Leap.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm never going to try and say your surname again. Hamblin.
Hamblin.
A little bit confusing. Hamblin. How's everything on your end then this week?
It's actually been a really good week. It's been insane, actually. Insanely good, if you were to quote someone famous. But I've had a delivery this week. I should say we have had a delivery this week for one of our clients. And I'm also
like an Amazon delivery.
Yeah, I know. It sounds like an Amazon delivery. Okay. We have delivered on our engagement with us at Leap. So it's like a 2-week engagement. Yeah.
Sprint or some design work?
It was a kind of a little bit of a mixture of the both of those. It wasn't like a full sprint by any means. It was more like a product. I kickstarted their product overhaul with a custom workshop, and then we went through and did a product audit. And then we had some very strict requirements from them, actually, that it was more about delivering within the realms of CSS, whatever our output was, so that they could implement it really, really quickly.
Oh, nice. But
it was great. We had them using Figma during the week. We gave them like Basecamp updates pretty much every day. And they are super happy. They've also got like an actual interactive style guide as well for their future records for all their modular components they want to add.
All done in CSS,
and yeah, all signed, sealed, and delivered. Very, very happy. And like I said, off the back of that, they have given us 2 recommendations to other potential clients, which I've been having talks with already this week. So it's been really, really good.
Comes to the purpose of our new podcast. It's all about the product.
It's all about the product.
I mean, that's something that I was, with the just coming up to the end of the first Prod MBA is ultimately that's really what I'm teaching people, is that, if you're having to throw money at sales and marketing and Facebook ads, for example, then ultimately the product's not good enough. You can only sort of plaster over that for so long. And I think, this whole startup world's a bit backwards, where immediately someone goes, oh, I've got this great idea, let's just throw a shitload of money at advertising, sort of force growth, raise investment, and then surprise, surprise, they haven't worked out really like what's the product, like what's it doing, there's no product market fit, and just goes into this sort of vicious cycle where Facebook, I suppose, is the only winner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, beats everybody hands down. Yeah. How's your week been, Henry?
It's good, actually. A few interesting things. So, I mean, core business. So within Product Mastery, our sort of current product is obviously this Prod MBA. So for anyone that's new to that, that is really a 6-week Product MBA program where we take you from trying to understand like what is a good idea, what's a good opportunity, all the way through to generating revenue at the end of 6 weeks. So really cool. Actually, we had two students have made revenue this week.
Wow, that's amazing.
Again, it comes back to the product is ultimately you have to deliver. And I think this is, it's been great because it's really validated just a huge amount of work, really the last at least 18 months, because I haven't talked about this before, but so last year I was working on Scribe, which is like a digital journaling app. And I think I realized that I just realized that the cycles, bootstrapping a digital product, if everyone's sort of working more or less full time, it's going to take 2 years to get to, very difficult to get to revenue, right? You have to build it to be good enough, even to use, takes a lot of time. So last year we sort of built that business up to generating revenue, like being sort of just about profitable, but without, not in terms of paying salaries or anything, sort of nearing 1,000 euros a month or so. And I think I made the sort of bold decision just to say, I don't want to do this. I think it's such a hard path to take that even though we're making money from this, like even though I can see a future with it, I actually want to just take a step back and really go in another direction. Had sort of, one of our co-founders wasn't delivering as well. So I had like a very tough conversation with him, essentially saying like, I'm not trusting that you're going to deliver. Yeah. So me as a product person, I felt sort of all this pressure of like, why the hell am I working with someone that's not delivering?
Yeah.
So I sort of, at that point, I was thinking, I'd coming up to publishing my book, which I've been working on since January. So this is sort of end of last summer. Published the book, and a lot of that was around sort of learnings around product leadership and what I think it means to be a good product leader and just effective person. So sort of came out to writing that, and I was like, am I living the principles right now of the book that I think are the right principles to live by? And felt I wasn't in that vehicle. And actually, I sort of took a step back and said, okay, what is my superpower? Like, what am I really good at? And where do I think I, as Henry, can really add value? So then, explored a few other ideas last year, and then literally right at the beginning of January, just said, started looking at, funnily enough, like remote HR tools. I felt there was something that, this is pre-COVID, looked at that. And again, sort of just felt, you know what, building something that's going to be good enough to pay for is going to take a couple of years. So I asked myself the question, actually, like, well, how could I do this in, 2-3 months? So moved away from that. And actually, a lot of those conversations around remote HR, a lot of them were product managers. And I was realizing that actually it's not so much about like remote team management. It's simply about broad product management. Like these people, they don't know quite what they're doing because most people sort of stumble into the role of product manager. So that was, let's say, February, sort of having conversations, doing some free mentorship calls, sort of understand like what we could do there. And and then again, looked, could do something digital and said, you know what, fuck it. I don't want to take 2 years building something I think is going to be blown out the water by Product Board, for example, who've just raised like 70 million from Sequoia Capital. it seems like a losing strategy. So just took all of the learnings that I've had from like sort of consultancy and freelance and sort of building early stage businesses and have packaged it into this product MBA program. So even though we have only, in launching that with an intern at the moment, we only launched that in mid-April in terms of actually like starting to acquire people, did a free beta version of it where taken on like 26 students, filtered them quite carefully, like it's quite a long application process just to get the right people. So yeah, and then, just been absolutely full on like building the course because I had a frame, structure for the 6 weeks before starting, but I didn't do any of the videos, like write any of the scripts until we kicked off. So I've always been, a week and a half ahead of them. So really up until this weekend, complete burnout this week, weekend before, I knew I was going to burn out with it. I was like, right, 5 weeks, just go hardcore at this thing. Like 3 hours of video content, all scripted, plus running like one-on-ones, workshops, etc.
Yeah.
So getting those two students that made sales is not all of them, obviously, but as a start, it's more than I could have expected. And we've still got engagement of, we still got 85% of the students still actively engaged, like on the calls each week. Submitted assignment. Cool. So so it's just coming to the end of that. So it's been a long, hard slog, but a very good validation of just a lot, not even the last 18 months, the last 6-7 years, I suppose, like building towards that. And I think now the question is obviously we're gonna gather video testimonials, like feedback to improve the offer, improve the core product itself. And and then start charging for the second version, which we will be launching in July.
Wow, it's all happening.
Yeah, exciting times. Yeah. Really exciting times.
But it's interesting listening to you then about when you were saying like it's been a tough 5 weeks. I think when you know within yourself that you have these chunks of time where you have to give it like literally everything, knowing you have the light at the end of the tunnel at the end of that time, it makes so much difference. It means that you can give it like that 100%. And I really actually empathize with you because I've had a really tough 3 weeks because I was also like cramming in some extra kind of work. I actually did a piece of video work for actually a friend of mine as well. So that consumed like all my evenings and weekends. And he's actually about to launch that on LinkedIn tomorrow. So it'd be interesting to kind of see how that performs. But yeah, you just give it everything and then you have to just take a bit of a step back. But
yeah. No, but I mean, it's been good. I think also with the I was talking about this one of the students, like she was saying, because she's sort of doing it as a project, right? So she's not building a business from the product she's working. So, you know, she made the point about if you lack intrinsic motivation, like there's a point where you just stop. Right? So, for example, the point where you get on a sales call, a lot of the students just aren't going to do that.
Yeah.
Which is completely fine. But I think in my case, right, it's like, no, I have this intrinsic motivation. I'm seeing the progress, you know, people really making sales. And it's, you have that thing to, there's that famous Japanese word, isn't there? For the thing you get up for in the morning, which is there. But I mean, also an interesting lesson I had, one of the notes I wanted to talk about today as well, is it's been a really interesting, in the background, another thing that has been huge for me this year is just saying no to stuff more. Because I think, you know, last year, I think work is like freelance product and consultant. Like, there's just a lot of work going around in Berlin.
Surprisingly,
manager or UX as well, like, I've been doing a bit of that. If you want, like, if you're proactive, there's a lot of work. And so I think one thing that I really said to myself in January is like, you know, I'm fed up with dealing with these like shitty projects. It's easy money, but it, you know, it's not getting me where I want to be. Right? I sort of feel myself in a bit of a loop. So I think different where you probably work on a more strategic level. You know, if I'm coming in just to build a design system or you know, to help organize somebody's sprints and stuff, then you just feel like you're not having that big an impact. So January, because I was in Brazil at my girlfriend's family's house, I had a lot of 2 months really to sort of step back and be away from the whole, you know, scene and networking, etc. And just, I was like, right, you know, fuck it. I'm going to give myself 6 months, cut out all of that and just focus on this.
Yeah.
By having that focus, it's not even the, say I'm doing, you know, 10 hours a week with someone. It's not just the 10 hours I'm working with them. It's the, you know, thinking about it when I go to sleep, half an hour preparation before every call, you know, your brain's on that and it's not on
the
important thing, which at this point is the product MBA.
It makes complete sense actually.
It's been really powerful. But on the flip side, obviously we've been talking about current crisis, you know, it does also make sense to get cash in the bank. So I've found a nice balance where I'm doing, you know, someone got in touch about some product consultancy and I've actually ended up doing like 2 to 4 hours a week is just design reviews, that kind of thing. And at that level, actually, in a small early stage startup, I'm finding it quite energizing because it guarantees me sort of base income. So I can, you know, I'm not having that thought in my head of like, you know, shit, I'm burning through cash.
Yeah.
And you know, doing design is fun. Like, it's really enjoyable. So I found a nice balance, but I think any more than that, I haven't, you know, I've said no to people. I've not been in any way proactive about it. So I'm hoping now that it pays off with the second iteration of the Prod MBA.
Yeah. I mean, but this is all about why we want to do the things that we're doing as well, isn't it? It's so that we do have, like, you know, it's very easy to fall in the steps of just being like a slave to the grindstone and just, it's one of those things where, actually, are we allowed to say that anymore?
I think it's fine if you use the word.
But like, as in just being like, you know, the person that just, like, going back to your question, like saying yes to everything. And, you know, we have deliberately kind of set up our own thing now so that we can kind of break the mold of like how we work, so we can have a bit more work-life balance and so we can actually pick and choose the work and the clients that we want to work with. And it is very easy, and I think the whole COVID situation exacerbates the need to kind of like not really sure where the next kind of contract's coming from. So, you know, there's that shit.
I think also, you know, worth mentioning that you're also new to obviously huge amount of experience in design, but launching your business has only been this year as well.
Yeah. Maybe I should just have a little quick overview of that as well, just so people know where I'm coming from as well. Because I think this is also like why we wanted to do the podcast, is that like Henry and I, we complement each other so well. Because you, I mean, I come at it from design and you come at it from, I mean, you're better off saying this than I am probably, that you come at it from like a management, product management, and kind of, how would you say it?
I like calling it, I think a lot of one of my skill sets is self-management.
Yeah.
Because it's not just time management. It's like, again, it's how are you managing, you know, through things like mindfulness and journaling and, you know, keeping free blocks of time in the day. It's your, how are you really taking care of yourself psychologically?
And the structure. Yeah, exactly. And the structure
beyond just, you know, just planning your calendar obviously is important, but it's part of ultimately managing your psychology, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, so my background is design, and I've had some pretty cool roles over, I hate saying this now, like the 20 odd years that I've
How old are you, brother? I've never asked.
I am 40. I'll be 46 quite soon. It's about 25 years. Yeah, fucking scary. So yeah, I started off in design in a traditional design agency, and then migrated into a very small company in Cambridge back in the early 2000s, 2003. It was called 3G Labs.
How did you find, like, sorry, when starting out with UX, what you studied design, right? But what?
I actually studied general art and design, and then graphic design, because this is also before a lot of kind of like, even before multimedia, like, so nothing like UX or interaction design existed then. And I actually, that's a lie, it kind of existed as HCI, so human computer interaction, and that was kind of like the early forms of what UX actually was. So like a lot of, actually I remember when I first started at 3G Labs, like people going, oh, do you have like much HCI experience? And you know, you could really easily kind of like talk your way into like, you know,
loads.
Done like interface design, so you know, that obviously credified anything that I'd actually done.
I suppose also at the beginning, a more limited, I suppose when it's, you know, it's basically just basic HTML templates, like there's not as
It was even like but there was still like people still needed to interact with their interfaces, so like there were still complexities that needed addressing there, but it was like for different mediums. Like I remember there were things like CD-ROMs, and like websites were just starting to like kick around like mid-90s, weren't they, as well? So these were kind of becoming the interaction points for customers, or for users, I should say. I'm going to try and skip forward in time a little bit, because obviously I don't want 25 years to take 25 minutes to explain. But bought out by Qualcomm, and then eventually became senior design manager for Qualcomm. So I report to the director of UX, who was based in San Diego, and end up doing some really cool work for those guys. Kind of wanting a bit more kind of socially and kind of with the family life, we ended up emigrating to the south of France, where I became a freelance design consultant, and I ended up working for companies like Vodafone and Deutsche Telekom. And to cut an even longer story short, that's where I met one of the original co-founders of AJ and Smart, Michael Smart, and we formed a pretty good relationship, stayed in touch, even helped them out with some project work that they were doing back in the early days. Then IBM contacted me to be, they headhunted me to be creative director of UX for the IBM studio that they were opening in Dubai. So moved there for a couple of years, again, more cultural experiences for the family, and a lot of heat, and ended up, it was good.
I love travel. I've been to a lot of countries, but Dubai is never... Went to the airport 3 times and was like, you know what, not bothered about leaving.
Yeah. I mean, there are some amazing things there. Like architecturally, there are some insane buildings. But you only really need like two or three days there to kind of
experience. I think I might do a stopover at some point.
Should do. Yeah, it is really good. So by that time, I was already at IBM, and having like 3 months in, I was having conversations with John and Michael from AJ and Smart. And they basically just said, look, just come and join us whenever you can. So that's how I ended up in Berlin, because I left IBM as creative director to join them for join them at AJ and Smart as product design director, where I ran the sprint teams and ran the actual client engagement and the client happiness, if you wish, for the product, which was Sprint, that we used to offer for everybody. So yeah, that's kind of me in a little bit of a nutshell.
So out of interest, that last point as well, did you guys use metrics for customer satisfaction, like post?
Yeah, we were using OKRs. Actually, probably for the last 2 years that I was there, we were using OKRs. And if anyone who knows OKRs, they are designed, if you do them correctly, you're kind of meant to fail them because you set them very, very high. But in failing them, you kind of also level up your kind of commitment to those OKRs as well. So you're already performing much better than you would. Yeah. But we actually had them, interestingly, we had them on the walls in the sprint room, and the clients actually loved that they were so customer facing that they would just, like, at the end of a sprint, they would stand in the corner of the room and go, this is amazing that you guys even have this, like, facing the clients. And, you know, I think one of those OKRs at that time was to have, I got to try and remember now. Like, it was client facing. Like, it had to be kind of like, you know, we want to have like re-engagement from our, from like, you know, from, you know, 90% of our clients.
So a really interesting point. Like, does that belie this? I mean, this is going to be very biased from me as sort of anti-corporate, but, you know, ultimately is that there's lack of transparency, right, in a lot of these big companies because their products are shit in many cases. You know, if you're talking to, I'm not going to name the bank, but one of my students is from one of the big UK banks.
Yeah.
Product owner. He's just like, literally all we do is try and lock people in. We just lock people into this product. So they can't have transparent, okay. I mean, they don't have OKRs. If they did have OKRs, then, you know, it'd be like one star. So, you know, it's funny, right? Is it like, so that got your client absolutely shocked because, oh my God, like, we'd be out of a job if we showed our key metrics.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that was also, I mean, I don't want to talk about AGM Smart for the whole thing, but it was just, they took an exceptional pride in providing like the best customer experience. And I, there's a lot to be taken away from that as well. Yeah. And it's instilled a lot of the foundations in kind of what I want to do for Leap as well. So yeah, I mean, it was really good. And, you know, the kudos to the guys for wanting to do that.
I mean, again, that comes back to the purpose of our podcast, right? Is that, that you can't skip over the fact that the product has to be high quality. It has to be high quality. You can only hack that for so long.
Yeah.
Again, because all of that, you know, that natural viral growth will ultimately come through referrals if it's clients or, you know, in our case, the success. I've always said this to our students, like from day one, like, we're not charging you. You know, I'm giving a load of time here because ultimately, like, I need you guys to succeed for us to succeed.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, no dodging around that really.
Did you ask for feedback at the end for all your students?
We've still got, I mean, I've got a workshop with them in half an hour.
Of course, yeah.
We're wrapping up on Friday. Yeah, so I mean, that's always been so my OKR has been, you know, base level. So a good would be 50% of students all the way through to the end.
Yeah.
I think we're looking at least 75, probably 80% for that, which is, which is great. Yeah, really happy with that. And then it is at least 90% of those that make it to the end giving a video testimonial and completing a survey. So that's what I'm sort of considering success. Also, interestingly with that, I mean, one thing that I've deliberately done as well and why I set that barrier quite low is that I've been ultimately like A-B testing two types of people within this. Is it's targeted at product managers and product owners, because many of them have zero experience when it comes to discovery. So purely focused on delivery, really working as project managers.
Yeah.
So I'm really just exclusively focusing on, like, how do you validate ideas? How do you build basic business plans? How do you actually, you know, get shit done in practice and just do lean testing and stuff? So that's within that, obviously there are people that want to start a business because we're ultimately validating an early stage business. And then there are those that are doing this as a project.
Yeah.
So what I'm looking for at the end is like, what were the expectations of each group? Were they met? And ultimately, like, what was the objective outcome?
Yeah, that's really good. And then you can marry those two up together. Exactly.
Yeah. And where did they get through? And then it may actually be that we serve both. It's just obviously the you know, people that want to start business are going to get more out of this than
Something I used to ask the clients from at the end of a sprint would be, and actually I did it with my client this week who I gave us two referrals. I'll mention it again. Something I would actually ask them, and we would have them do this in person with post-it notes. So that all we had to do is get them to write on three post-it notes, something that they liked, something that they thought a success was, and then something that they wished. So that way it was all done anonymously as well, but it was also,
I've done it
it's just nice. It's just a nice way of kind of going and then you can try and recognize the handwriting from the people who wrote it and really understand from their perspective, and it's great. Like I think that's the only way you really kind of better your product, by collecting that feedback. And then
It's funny, isn't it, that just sorry on that topic, it's such a big one. I think if you haven't gone through the process of like working on failed products, for example, I absolutely like crave constant feedback, not because I'm needy, but because I want it to make sure that like, you know, the product's going in the right direction.
Yeah.
And you know, but it goes against, right, it's very uncomfortable. It goes against human nature. Like we don't like to be excluded from the group in any way, or you know, feel uncomfortable about these things. So, you know, that's just a huge problem, right? Is you're not going to improve your product unless you're listening and just obsessing over the customer and like speaking to the customer all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of companies just ignore it.
Yeah. You did amazing then, Henry.
No, again, I'm always, every time I do use it, I'm just like, please just, you know, I obviously, you can't say it doesn't help saying it, but you know, just relax, it's not a test, we just want the truth, the more honest the feedback the better, etc.
I think if you'd asked me as a designer in my younger days, like whether I wanted feedback, I would have, like the ego would have just gone, yeah, you can't give me any feedback, I'm doing great,
I'm the best.
But I think it's a really, there's a few people that I've worked with over the years that have really kind of taught me that actually, do you know what, you can learn actually so much more about how yourself, about how you receive that sort of feedback as well. And and essentially just, yeah, why wouldn't you want to improve? No one
exactly really. I mean, it's a good interesting moral point as well. It's for me, it's like, it's morally wrong to hold feedback back. Because ultimately, at least when you're working in startups, like generally people want to improve, they want to be learning, like they're young and quite eager in most cases. So I don't want to be ageist, but never, you know, generally people that work that are attracted to that kind of environment want to learn, want to improve, and they're ultimately preventing them improving by not providing feedback. I mean, an interesting one, but it's quite funny. When I was working in Brazil three and a half years ago, so in Sao Paulo, and like Brazilian culture. So I was working in Portuguese, but so like culture, I have a good deep understanding of Brazilian culture from being there for quite a while and speaking the language.
Yeah.
There is a thing where, because it is very communal society, like people are very, you know, for example, like one thing I got told off by a friend, because we'd go to a party together or like a club. And I'd be like, you know, 2 a.m. Like, yeah, I'm just going to go home, see you guys later. For them, I was like, what? Like, you go as a group, you leave as a group. Like, you leave at 5 a.m. when everyone else is leaving. I said, no, fuck that. I'm going to try it. Because also, for me, I was like, I didn't really see them. I was like, it's fine. You guys just enjoy yourself. I'll go home. Yeah. Anyway, point is that because of that, there's a cultural thing about being excluded from the group, like that is stronger, it's less individualistic than you know, the UK, let's say. So it's very difficult, even though, despite whenever we did like one-on-ones feedback sessions, despite people understanding that this was a good thing, they found it very difficult. You know, you could tell it was a personal it was coming across as a personal attack when it was even said in a very like friendly, empathetic way.
It's
an interesting one.
So, I mean, so you kept doing it every time you went out, you kept leaving like halfway through the night.
Everyone's out to like 6 a.m. Well, they have like, it's like Berlin in the 90s, I think, is my impression of Sao Paulo. I'm not going to go too much into it in case someone, grandparents or parents end up listening, but I mean, they do like 2-day parties there, so that you're out like Friday and there till Sunday. Like Saturday, early, you know, with sunrise, I am 100%. This is time out, like home time. But no, I find that really interesting because I just, again, it's we live, you know, we come from an individualistic society, even though we might be unaware of that. On that feedback topic, it's one that I've learned to be. Try and really like pick up on who am I speaking to and like how do I deal with this person on an individual level rather than just blanket like, here's some feedback, deal with it.
Exactly.
That's right. I've just got 5 minutes, by the way.
That's your 5 minute timer. It always goes quick though, doesn't it?
Yeah. What else were we catching up this week? No, that's it. I mean, Product MBA going well. Doing one bit of client work, which I'm quite enjoying actually. Back on Figma, doing some design, which is nice. So I find it really relaxing. Product managers, there's a lot of headaches going on. Yeah, there's a lot of like things.
I think you should try and design an interface using Photoshop, and then you'll appreciate
I'll send you this after. I wrote an article 2 years ago on building design systems in Sketch. So I think it's still the third most read. I mean, it's got like a ridiculous number of reviews.
Cool, yeah, send it to me.
It was basically going like, when I discovered Sketch after using Photoshop, it was literally like Christmas coming early.
Yeah, it's like literally
you got redesigned stuff.
Yeah, it was crazy.
You can't even copy and paste, could you, across? You'd have to have like separate tabs and...
You had layers. So I can remember Photoshop pre-layers, which was very interesting, although we weren't really doing interface design back then. That's crazy. But Photoshop just ended up becoming just a cluster of just a mess. And
Adobe is still going.
Yeah, it's still going. But like, I think it's just a different tool now. But like, you were, as a designer, you were hired on not how well you could design, but how well you could name your layers as a way of kind of being really regimented in how you worked.
Some of these
layers would just be ridiculously large.
Sketch, that's a great example, like true innovation, right? Because everything after that, if you look at Framer.
But do you know XD as well? Like Adobe XD, that was...
Yeah, I used it once.
It was really good. They were always a little bit late to the game, though.
They were behind the curve with Sketch, weren't they?
Yeah. Sketch kind of got the heads up on them.
It's really interesting space because nobody's quite cracked that whole thing of like going from concept to wireframe to final UI prototyping. It's still sort of pieced together with these different tools. I think Figma could be the one that...
I think Figma, yeah. I wireframe it in Figma now already, so it makes it easier to really transition.
I think that they're almost there, but it doesn't... it is really, I think, if you actually just used it. And I mean, the collaboration feature as well is great.
That's why we used it during sprints, so that we could actually create the prototype in such a rapid amount of time.
A lot of pushback whenever I suggest it. Oh, but I love Sketch. It's like, no, I get that.
Yeah, going from Sketch to Figma feels like going from Photoshop to Sketch.
Yeah. No, it's much less. It's much less. I'm an evangelist now, but no, Photoshop was bullshit. That was bullshit. Also, I remember starting like doing a couple of freelance stuff with Sketch and whilst people were still using Photoshop, I was like,
what are you doing?
I'm literally, you know, it's build by hour, right? So this is definitely at least 10 times faster. And like, it's going to cause way less of a headache for developers as well, because you're not exporting like a PDF.
Yeah, exactly. But back in the Photoshop days, you would have to do things manually, like giving all the measurements and actually create, like it took so much time.
I think
going now back to Sketch feels very claustrophobic, I have to say. My advice to designers actually is always never just become reliant on one tool anyway. So if you're a true designer of this age, you should really be seeing what XD are doing, keeping an eye on what Sketch are also implementing.
InVision still have some design tool they're working on, aren't they?
Yeah, they completely remastered their product a couple of years ago. Became a bit of a beast. But
I mean, another point that I think is so important is you see all this shit online about, you know, like, so you go into, I'm in product groups, for example, on Facebook, and everyone's like, which tool should I use for X? It's like, it's sort of important, like it's way down the list of importance.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you're using Photoshop, then that's a complete waste of time. But, you know, difference between Sketch and Figma, not really the end of the world. Just better at the high level stuff. Like, what are we trying to understand? Like, what are we trying to achieve? How does it help the user? How does it help the business?
Yeah. What was interesting, actually, when we were going to visit companies like Twitter and Mercedes and companies like HSBC, like they would all be using Figma. Which is really, really, really? Like reassuring. Yeah, absolutely.
I would have thought they'd be stuck in the dark ages still.
Yeah, no, actually surprisingly, up to date with those things, which made our jobs a little bit easier as well. But I think it was on the co-collaboration. I think that was the single feature that really elevated
Figma. It's an interesting one. I mean, on the flip side, I worked with the German client who they couldn't, like, basically all these legal stuff, they're still stuck using, I can't remember, I think it was Adobe XD, but it was just so not, you could see it causing so many problems for them.
Yeah.
And then a couple of designers were like, no, we were taught this in university, so we still use Photoshop for most things. I was like, no, but like the world changes. definitely changed in the last like 10 years.
I mean, I still, like, Photoshop was such a massive part of my career. I won't ever really kind of poo-poo it. I definitely wouldn't design UIs in it now. But it's, for me, it's like I actually have like the Adobe Creative Suite like subscription, and I can't ever imagine not having it. So they're kind of their business model is working. Like, so they're
survive without it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's good, but I mean, also, right, ultimately, if you're editing photos, like, Photoshop is a very good tool for that.
Yeah, and it also makes, like, when you're doing video production as well, like, you want to use the same suite of tools so that you can copy and paste more easily as well. So they've definitely got that bit kind of, like, buttoned down for, like, potential straying customers. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Anyway, I'm going to have to shoot because I'm doing a workshop on... quite interesting. I'm going to do, well, I think it's interesting, workshop on like the hero's journey and how you can leverage and understand the of that to like better improve your CV, like improve your interviewing technique and like how you pitch yourself ultimately.
Yeah, that interesting. Yeah. You need to ping me a copy of your book as well sometime.
Yeah, I'll give you, I think I've got a couple of physicals.
It's not like the, do you remember that TV ad where it was, have you got Fly Fishing by like J.R. Hartley or something? It was like a cigar advert. It was like, yeah, this woman's going, oh, have you got Fly Fishing by J.R. Hartley? And then the ad comes around and they eventually found a copy. And then someone did a comedy sketch on it. I think it was for Yellow Pages or something. And then someone did a comedy sketch going, yeah, like this woman eventually goes around like all these shops, like old bookshops, and finds this guy with a copy.
I reckon there's a few copies in charity shops already from my.
And he goes, and the end of the joke is that the guy goes out the back and says, yeah, I've got like millions of them. I've never been able to sell any.
No, I've got zero stock. Done it through Amazon. Sure that there are a few in charity shops. Like my grandma buying a book on startup and product processes is. She's 85. I'm pretty sure she didn't read it, but anyway. Right, I've got to shoot. Well, that is a wrap for our first podcast.
Yay.
So I'll post that.
Send your feedback.
Yeah, looking forward to the next one. We'll catch up a couple of weeks then.
Yeah, nice one.
Speak then, Rob.
Cheers, Henry. Oh.